Hello and welcome to Grumpy Gamers. You're here with me, Pete, and along with me this week I have Ben.
Hello.
And Eddie.
Hello.
Nice, good energy, Eddie. Myself and Eddie actually had a pretty heavy weekend, so we're going to be forcing any energy we bring to the show tonight just to prepare everyone for that. But it's
I've already tried to GM up, tried to say that we've got to be bringing the energy, yeah. But I can sense it's not big energy tonight.
It's, I mean, it is what it is, Ben. We're here. We've got some
exactly. What more can I ask?
Precisely. And it will give you a good chance to mock us at points, I'm sure. So yep. You'll look forward yep. to that.
It'll be fine.
But as usual, we do have some news to bring you, and this week's new releases. What we've been playing is pretty sparse, but Ben's actually gone through two games, haven't you?
Two games. We've got two games to talk about. We've got Two Point Campus and we've got Cult of the Lamb.
Yes, nice, indeed.
Nice.
That's going to be excellent. I mean, we all know my thoughts on Two Point Campus, but Cult of the Lamb would be amazing. And our feature today is titled If You Had 5 Minutes with Obsidian.
I think we've got visions of this being like a series of features we could do at different times, haven't we? If you had 5 minutes with such and such. So, it's we're giving this one a test run.
Exactly. So let's, when we get to it, we'll have to see how that goes. But for now, we should kick off with the news.
Lovely job. Okay, the quick news then. First of all, Ghosts of Tsushima, the movie. We're all aware that there's a movie coming out, I think. So it's rumoured to be in Japanese with subtitles. So the quote is, they said that it would scare the shit out of most people, but Sony is on board with backing them on the idea of Japanese and subtitles and having a fully Japanese cast. And Western audiences in general are getting more and more used to reading subtitles. So that's the quote that I've seen. I'm not sure if this is actually confirmed, and I don't know whether this is also translated as well. So it could just be that this is a rumour that it's going to be Japanese. But,
I thought this was still a rumour. But Cyberpunk Edgerunners, the trailer was in Japanese as well. So...
Oh, right.
It does
okay.
seem to be a more common thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have suspected that wouldn't be the case just because of the massive Western audience appeal. But I don't know. Like, we'll see whether this turns out to be.
Yeah, but you've seen Netflix and Amazon and all them. They're going more and more that way. And it's not really... If you said this 10 years ago, I think a lot of people would be really upset. But now, I mean, how many great things come out and it's just subtitles and we just get on with it?
No, I know you watch we watch a lot of the same shows, Eddie, because we like that type of like horror from like Asian horror.
Yeah.
But you watch in proper authentic and read the subtitles, whereas I have the English dubs.
Yeah. I like the imagine. You know what I noticed? Watching all the Three Kingdoms videos, because I've been playing the crap out of it for the past month. A lot of people actually use the original voices, the Chinese voices. You just toggle it on and off, which is, I think, a really cool addition.
That's good. Yeah, that is
I think a lot of people in the Xenoblade games like Japanese cast, and they like to read the subtitles instead because it's just authentic kind of emotion. But I tell you what, the Xenoblade, going back to last week, the voice acting in it is very good, regardless, and the English voice acting is really, really good.
Just like the Pokemon games.
just like those. Very good. Okay, not high energy, but he's on it. He's on it. He's here. Good. That's good. Right. Next one. There was a THQ Nordic showcase, and a new South Park game is in development. There's also a reimagining of Alone in the Dark that's also being made. We have Netflix Gaming. So they, you know, Netflix do gaming, and that has actually been released, and it does actually exist. I didn't know this.
I didn't know.
I know that it was talked about, and we always say how it could be a good thing. But when
Eddie, it's a real thing. Supposedly, it's a real thing.
So
Netflix have some games, but less than 1% of people who have Netflix or have a Netflix subscription have actually played the games.
That's not a strong percentage.
Well, it's even less than that then, because people share their Netflix subscriptions, so the percentage is probably even less. So I don't even know how you access the Netflix games. Probably one for us to look at.
Must be on the service. And for the record, to Netflix, I do not. No one here at Grumpy Gamers share their subscriptions.
No, of course not.
Definitely not.
No. Well, actually, I'm the main payer of mine, and everyone piggybacks off me. Never mind.
Speaking of Rex Brown, can we talk BT Sports sometime soon, buddy?
But, you know, yeah, we need to.
Ben, you changed your password a while ago, and I can't get on now.
I, it's because I got rid of it. Now I'm back in action. We can we can sort something, guys. Don't worry about it.
Thank
you, right. Then we got a whole list of game delays. So, Marvel Midnight Suns, you know, the one that was shown fucking ages ago, and was shown again. People were looking forward to this. It's been delayed up until sometime before the end of the fiscal year, so sometime before the end of March 2023. So it's been pushed back. It's already been delayed, so this is like its second delay. Then we had one which I'm not sure if this is an official delay because we never had a date, but Hogwarts Legacy is not coming out this year. And it's been pushed to the 10th of February 2023, which in the grand scheme of things isn't too bad. So if you were expecting this around about November time because they hadn't said anything, to wait till February, probably not the biggest deal. But it has been pushed.
That, like, the seasonal releases before Christmas, a lot of them just seem to end up in February. So we're gonna, I think we're going to end up with another awesome February.
Absolutely.
Because they aim for December and then fuck up.
I think we're going to have a February, March next year, exactly the same as this year, where it's just release on release. But there's also another game which supposedly isn't going to get delayed, and that is Sonic Forces. So when the developer was asked, and it's been translated, whether they have considered a delay based on the feedback that the audience has given to the trailers, and they said no, they haven't considered a delay. Now, that doesn't mean anything. That could be like the dreaded vote of no confidence before you get sacked on Football Manager, but it's they supposedly are committed to releasing this year, and that would be cool if Sonic Forces actually gets in, sneaks in for November time or something like that. So we can only hope. But that is not a huge quick news week.
No, not a huge one, but some interesting stuff. But, and I mean, I suppose the first of the news stories today kind of ties in with this nicely, because the last we heard of Forspoken was when its release was pushed back to January. And let's just say that the news this week hasn't been great for them either, because they dropped a new trailer on Twitter. Have you guys seen this?
No, I haven't actually, no.
I've seen it.
I would advise everyone to check it just for a lesson in how not to do dialogue. So this is it's a short trailer. It's got the main character, Frey Holland, talking to us about the world, trying to, you know, set you up, build a bit of hype for it. And instead, it's just the worst dialogue. It's so poor. Like, the amount of people who've laid into this already is staggering. People have been taking clips of other games and doing the same sort of thing there. And
That is quite funny when they've done that.
Yeah, those are pretty good, but my God, why would you bring this out?
I don't know. So let's just so for the audience, the trailer is basically that. How would you describe it, Pete? It's like candid, kind of very Americanized, kind of teenage speaking to the audience.
Yeah,
kind
it's
of
that
dialogue.
Breaking the fourth wall about where you live and what you're doing. That's what they're trying to do. It's that speak directly to the audience about how shit it is.
I forget some of the things she says, but she's like, it's like, oh, there's dragons, and oh, I use magic. Oh, I use magic now, or something like that. It's like, it's really like candid stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I don't want to quote it, Ben. It's horrible.
the thing is, like, everyone's jumped on this, and Forspoken is that game which is easy. And, like, we've made little digs at it as well on this, but ultimately, I think this doesn't necessarily represent how the game will be.
God no.
How
God
it'll
no.
be in the game.
It's,
this
God,
this
not
could
at
just
all.
Be
it's just a staggering
this could just
advertising
be a trailer.
Fail. Marketing.
But and equally, like, I don't know. You've got to. People just love jumping on the bandwagon on this one. So I was not that interested, but I am a little bit.
I tried to view the trailer, and I don't want to put the sound on, but when I scrolled down, the first comment went to report your account, but there is no option for cringe, so I picked terrorism. Thank you. I can't wait to watch this trailer now.
it's not great, but when if I look past that and I look at the gameplay that's in the trailer and what's going on in the trailer, like, there is something there. Like, this game could be something.
This is something to pull back on. The actual gameplay shown, the gameplay loop looks like it could be a lot of fun. If you put that trailer on mute and just watch the gameplay,
that's what I did. And I thought
some excitement for this game.
I thought this looks okay because I didn't want to put the sound on to ruin this audio, but it looked fine.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I think one of the questions about this is whether they've used the extra time that they've got to make the game any better, or whether this game is actually basically done. And it has been reported that the game is like it's been pushed back just to avoid God of War, when actually they're not doing much more. The game is basically done.
Yeah.
So
really hope they're doing a lot of testing. But yeah. But this is it. That's it. If you put that trailer on mute, the gameplay looks interesting. That looks like it could be the decent basis for a game. It's the moment you listen to that voice and the dialogue they picture it, it goes horribly, horribly wrong.
It's immersion breaking, isn't it?
Massively so, yes.
Yeah. So it's really immersion breaking, so.
Mm. So that's it. Watch it once on mute and be interested, and then watch it again with the sound on just to get that sort of prickling up your spine unpleasantness out of the way.
And then report it for terrorism.
Yeah. Maybe not. But, I mean, yeah, report it for terrorism. That sounds wise.
There's no cringe option. What do you want?
Mental.
Yeah.
I'll go next. Microsoft claims Sony pay to keep games from Game Pass. How cool is that? So this came from Eurogamer. The acquisition appears in a 27-page rebuttal of Sony's recent objections to Microsoft Activision Blizzard buyout made to Brazil's Administrative Council for Economic Defense as part of its investigation. Do you remember, was it a week or two, probably 3 weeks ago, Sony voiced their concerns over the Activision takeover that Microsoft.
I think it was last week, wasn't it?
Was it last week?
I was going to go with 2 weeks ago. We've got very, very perceptions of time.
I reckon too. I think Ben's wrong. Yeah.
Let's go two.
It could easily be last week, but yes, let's go two.
Yeah. So if you remember, I thought at the time that they had to comment on it, but it looks like it's an optional thing. But Sony basically said, it's a bit shit because Call of Duty has no... What was it? They have no competitors?
They said that it's unrivaled. It's in one of the top 10 franchises in the world or whatever. Mm. It's like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, that type of...
Yeah, exactly. So this is basically Microsoft responding to this. Again, it's all made public because Brazil has those kind of laws. Not that I'm criticizing it. But anyway, Microsoft's response is a wide-ranging of Sony's initial objections, touching on everything from the fact it has previously managed to grow Game Pass without Activision Blizzard's titles, suggesting Call of Duty mightn't have been quite as essential as Sony claims, to be a reiteration of its assurances that it won't be making Call of Duty Xbox console exclusive. It's here that Microsoft takes a swipe at Sony, pointing out, as per a Google translated version of the filing, that for all its concerns around exclusivity, the use of exclusive arrangements has been the heart of Sony's strategy to strengthen its presence in the gaming industry. Microsoft says Sony's concerns are incoherent, given that by virtue of PlayStation's dominant market share, the company is a leader in the distribution of digital games. Essentially, when, as Microsoft claims, Sony has actively hampered the growth of Game Pass by paying for blocking rights to prevent developers from adding content to Game Pass and other competing subscription services. The full document has plenty more in the way of rebuttals to Sony's claims, including Microsoft's note that one of the major industry players to be canvassized by the Brazilian government on the acquisition, Sony was the only one to object, and is well worth a read. So, what do you guys think? I mean, I know they've said that Call of Duty is not going to be Xbox exclusive, but I didn't think that they would go as far as to state this, because let's be honest, I think they're going to try and go away from that, right? They're going to eventually keep it only Xbox.
I think it's 3 years.
It's 3 years, though, guaranteed at the moment. Mm. But I think it's an interesting one. But I want to touch... I'm going to bring a bit more into this, by the way, because I dug a little deeper into this on my own time. Definitely not when I couldn't move from the couch yesterday and just had to find things to occupy my eyes. But firstly, I mean, what do we think about Sony not only being the only ones to complain about anything, but also about the paying people to keep things off Game Pass? Because it's a valid business practice, but it pisses me off.
Yeah, it's dirty.
That's what I've been hearing all week. Like, that's what I've been reading. That's what people are saying. And my response to that is, grow the fuck up. Of course they do that. What do you think happens? It's a fucking business.
It is a valid thing, but it just fucks me off anyway. Like,
but they pay to have exclusive things on their console anyway. Like, what difference is it to say you can't put it? There's no difference in that business practice. It's just saying, I don't want that to go over there. I don't want that to be available there. It's the same thing.
Yeah, what's the problem? What I'm arguing against is I don't think they should have the option to do that.
Yes, I think that's really awful. Maybe if it's a PlayStation exclusive, then yeah, but as soon as it doesn't become a PlayStation exclusive, then I think those options should be taken off the table. Yeah.
But why should that happen? So Sony give them money to make a better game, so they pay them, so they make a better game as a result. And now you're saying that they can't have a... They can't say some stipulations around that. The money has been taken for that purpose, and what's wrong with any of that?
I think all future games shouldn't be that like that, because that excludes the availability of games.
All these deals.
Anything that limits our options, Ben, I'm going to be against.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, you're looking at your personal options.
Because why would I give a fuck about their profit line is the other question to this.
Absolutely.
I'm not talking about profit lines. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that there are so many practices in the gaming kind of landscape that control where games are. This is just another example. I don't see how it's dirty.
Most of them gone.
no, forget about your own personal, because everyone would like to be able, I'd like to play every game on the Switch. It's not happening. Like, it's not, that's not the world we live in. That won't be any world in any industry that we live in. Forget about that and just say, well, that does exist, so why is this particular one any different?
I suppose because it comes on the back of them complaining about anti-competitive things. Like, if you're utilizing the exact same tools in a very similar format, you can't really complain about it.
I think Microsoft have constructed... They've constructed a good argument.
Yes.
admittedly. But I'm just saying on the actual practice itself, I don't think it's dirty. I can say you can... I buy into Microsoft's thing here that says that it's incoherent because you're saying one thing and doing another. But when people... Because that dirty practice thing has been thrown around throughout the week. I can't understand that rationale. And I know, I think, Eddie, you may have said it there. I can't understand that rationale. I just can't.
But I can't understand how you don't think, because it's just dirty tactics. It's stopping someone else or half the population from playing a game because you're greedy and you don't want the game to be on another console because you want all the money from the selling of this game.
Well, no, but they've paid money for that process, and Final Fantasy is on PlayStation.
But then they can use the power of Sony as a bargaining tool. They can say, this is part of the contract. We'll give you another £5, but without this, we will reject this. And that's probably what they say in 90% of their negotiations. I'm not complaining against Sony, because I'm sure I'm complaining about the practice that this even exists. This should not be a thing.
That, fair enough. That's a valid thing. But then where do you stand on third-party exclusivity for games?
Exclusivity
as much as possible.
I don't like exclusivity at all.
And that's fair. That's fair enough. But what I'm saying is that you won't get as good games because they won't have enough money to make the games that...
Ben, you know and love that are exclusive. Ben, you're talking to people who think RimWorld is one of the best games ever made, and it was made for about £6.50.
You have to also accept that there's a wider audience than just yourself.
I refuse to accept that. You are all figments of my imagination.
But then we're at an impasse.
We are, and we probably should move on to the other point of this, by the way. Microsoft's rebuttal was quite an interesting one, and there's a few interesting quotes there about why they wouldn't make Call of Duty an exclusive, by the way. And I'll start with one here, which was, the reality is that the strategy of retaining Activision's games by not distributing them in rival console stores would simply not be profitable for Microsoft. That's not to say it could never be profitable, but it, given the situation and due to additional costs that might be involved, they don't think it's a practical solution. They pointed out amongst this that lost sales, meaning sales from all other platforms, meant it would not be worth the money, essentially, to them. So this was their reply on it, and it said, where's the next bit? This is especially true considering the gamer-centric rather than device-centric strategy that Microsoft has pioneered with Game Pass. That was the next bit up. And then added, and the fact that PlayStation has the most loyal users across its various generations, with every indication that brand loyalty accrued through previous rounds of the console wars, suggests that PlayStation will continue to have a strong market position. So it does sound like a fair point, you know. And as we found out last week or the week before, Activision Blizzard mostly make money through mobile games. So I'm guessing they're not thinking about this anywhere near as much.
I do think this 3-year thing is a great sample size for them to actually see how much people have bought into the Game Pass model and gone. Because in the grand scheme of things, in your yearly spend, that £70 you're going to have to spend getting Call of Duty as opposed to getting on Game Pass isn't material enough for somebody to buy an Xbox. That's what they're saying, isn't it? That because Microsoft are on many different systems and you can load it up on whatever, and cloud gaming might be, they're not going to make it up on console sales. So I could definitely understand them keeping it non-exclusive after
you
3 years.
Well, I'm going to mention it again, Ben, and you're going to shake your head and strongly disapprove, but I'd be so interested if in 3 years they try and pull it off. PlayStation complain and Microsoft go, it's available on Game Pass, and Game Pass could easily be put on PlayStation.
Yeah, I know.
See how that does from an anti-competitive standpoint, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's I honestly think that's where they're leaning on this, where it's like, well, even if we did put it on Game Pass, Game Pass is on everything and it's Sony's choice not to have it.
Exactly, yeah. Put it back on Sony. And that could be their angle, which would be quite interesting.
Absolutely. It's like, well, Sony didn't make this deal work. That's on them.
Exactly.
Who knows? I think from this one article, these two points, like, there's quite a lot of discussion there. Like, it's interesting.
And can we celebrate Brazil's weird rules that allow us to see this stuff? Because it is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's providing the bulk of the news for everyone these past few weeks, and it's all just coming out of one administrative choice. Love that. Like, absolutely love it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, shall I lift the mood? Because there was a Nintendo Direct last Wednesday, and it was just after our podcast came out, so I couldn't really talk about it, but it was about Splatoon 3. There was a 30-minute Splatoon 3 Nintendo Direct, and it was a really odd presentation. I'm assuming neither of you watched it, because it's not something that you're particularly interested in. You have got a Switch, blah, blah, blah. So I'll just recap it briefly, the good points. So, odd presentation, because they acted like nobody had ever played Splatoon, which is obviously what they were going with in this audience. They basically showed the basic game mechanics about how to shoot. what was going on. Really weird. A little boring, but yeah, okay, fine. New players, all that kind of jazz. But the actual content looked really solid. They showed Turf War, which is the basic 4x4 mode, where you paint the map. And the new techniques and stuff. There's going to be 12 stages at launch. New stages are going to be added in updates. That's much better than a certain Microsoft exclusive that we've all played. So that's a solid number. All weapons from the previous games will be in this one, and you can unlock them on the way. And there'll be some new weapons, including the Splatana, which is a katana. But
of course it is.
And it looks like the weapon that I'll be using. It looks fucking good. And there's new specials as well and all this kind of stuff. So
for a man who doesn't like samurai, you use a katana equivalent whenever it's given to you.
Every game.
Every game.
That's, you're a man of inconsistencies, Ben. I'll give you that.
Okay. I've never said I'm not. it looks basically, there's a different way that you buy weapons using shield and licenses, but it's essentially the same thing. Leveling up your character and weapons gets you more in-game currency stuff to use to buy these. It's all about the gear again, the gear that you wear, like top to bottom, has every different gear has like four slots that you unlock different perks for. You can replace some of these perks with some stuff. It takes ages to get the exact kind of gear setup you want with your playstyle because all these perks you can have. But looks pretty identical, to be honest. The lobby system's been improved. Looks like Nintendo's best online effort to date. They're actually acknowledging that other people exist.
Yeah.
Which is great. Also to note that they showed off the Nintendo app again, which is virtually non-existent. The app is to all intents and purposes dead, except for Splatoon, because it's got this really cool thing that I wish, I'm sure I used to look at a website for this, Eddie, on Warzone, but it's got like all your previous games, like it's got your overall win percentages, your accuracy rating, your like your score in each round and everything like that. It's got all of those, and it's also got because Splatoon is a timed game, as in like the ranked games, they change all the time, and it'll show you what stages are on at that particular time, what ranked games are present. You can also buy things from the store using your in-game currency, so if you see a cool piece of gear that has all the perks you want, you're like, oh shit, I want that. You can buy it on your phone, and then it appears on your game. Like, but that doesn't seem like any update from the last game. But they're just pushing it again, which is it's actually one of the best uses of kind of app stuff in a game that I've ever seen. So
I love it when a game has an app like that. It keeps like when you're at work, you know, and you on your lunch break, just open it up and I used to do it with FIFA, I think it was. Yeah,
because the gear that they have on there, I think, is available on the app, but maybe isn't available in game at that time, and it replenishes that a couple of times a day, so you can log on and go, oh, I really want that cool thing, so you buy it and it appears in your game. So it's really, it is quite good. They also showed off like a trading card game, which has been added, where it's like a deck builder or something, which is like a mini game thing. I don't know, it sounds good that they're just adding some more content. Salmon Run's bigger and better than it was. Story mode, blah, 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 looks bigger and better. It looks like more Splatoon. Don't fix something that isn't broken.
Yes, but just tell everyone exactly how to play it again, even though it's the three cool.
exactly. But there's more things. There's a large-scale paid DLC coming in, and they've added some trios mode for each Splatfest, which is also really good. So looks like they're going to be supporting it heavily after launch. There's a high-quality Nintendo game coming. So that's something to be celebrated.
He says in a completely deadpan way.
Yeah, well, they've had some absolute fucking tragic ones recently, so it's about time we had a good one.
Is there voice acting in this?
It's not real voices, it's like, you know, like sounds.
Right, cool, so they actually have sounds. That's good. That's one step up.
They have sounds. It sounds like if you're speaking, you've timesed it by like 10.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, of course. Cartoony style voices. Yeah, fair.
That's the badger. Yes.
Eddie,
you're
dangerously
gotta
natural at that.
Yes.
I think you could be hired, so that's a good advert for you.
Pokemon, I put a letter to them. They have not responded.
Yeah, just podcast at grumpygamers.co.uk, Pokemon. You can have Christopher Eddie as a voice actor.
He also has fantastic pirate and Irish options as well.
Very good Scottish. Very good Scottish. If you want a Highlander, then you can be cool.
I'm not sure they do, but there we go. Hopefully.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I know you're looking forward to Splatoon, Ben, and I for one applaud you for that.
I really am. Really am. Excellent. It can be good.
Excellent. Well, the final bit of news is also a good one. It's only a small note, but I think it's another chance to celebrate modders, guys. Because there is a new mod for Skyrim. Yes, it's still ongoing. That adds the Nemesis system from Shadow of Mordor.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously,
didn't someone buy this? Didn't someone buy the rights to that?
Someone bought that system, but modders are alluring to themselves, Eddie. We know this. obviously the Nemesis system was by far and away the best and most innovative thing about Shadow of Mordor. And this is the system that allows enemies to be promoted, level up, get more difficult based on beating you. So it's essentially creating your own Nemesis as your playthrough goes on. And yes, that does mean that all the tiny creatures in Skyrim that might have accidentally killed you or knocked you off a cliff or something can technically become your biggest enemy in the game, as opposed to the world-ending dragon you're meant to fight. And they get specific buffs now if they kill you, and you also get a specific debuff if they kill you, which you can only remove by beating them.
Oh!
Yeah, and they can steal gear as well. They can steal gear to use for themselves.
That mud crab is going to be rocking around in some cool shit.
That frost golem when you head up to the mountain range.
It'll be a nightmare. You rock up there and he's in full Daedric armor. Yeah.
He was already the toughest one in the whole map, so he just got promoted.
Honestly, anyone who didn't just cheese it way through that was doing the wrong thing. There was no reason to fight that dude. Just run. Run like the wind.
I hate things that steal your armor. I think in Dark Souls 2, there's a boss that, if it swallows you, it takes your armor.
Mm.
What? What? Yeah. All my shit. What?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, it was Warner Brothers, by the way, who patented this. So it's definitely not going to become an official one.
Mm-hmm.
But the mod is there and it can be installed. And I also think it's worth highlighting that this is why Skyrim continues to be so popular.
Yeah,
is that the modding community continues to make awesome inclusions. I've talked before about how much I loved the Nemesis system and how I want it to be in pretty much every game.
Yeah, same.
And it's now in Skyrim, which is probably reason enough to play that game again when you think about it.
You know what? Actually, when you started this, I thought, I could play Shadow of Mordor again. Yeah.
That's fair. That game. But now the best bit of that game is in Skyrim, Eddie.
So why not?
It's pretty cool. For Starfield, you're not going to get Starfield on PC, are you, Pete? You'll get it on Xbox.
I'm not sure yet. I haven't decided.
Because that could be an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, that would be
ease of modding, yeah. I might well do PC. You know?
Ooh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if it's on Game Pass, I might go Game Pass first. And then.
Well, it is on Game Pass.
Play it on that. So and then.
I'll probably buy it when I want to.
You could have Game Pass on PC and then add in the mods within the files, right?
Yes, very true.
There we go.
Yeah. That's a very good question. We'll have to see how good their launch is as well. But yes, that is going to be the next one that gets modded to infinity and beyond.
Pete, if I know games, and I think I do, that's going to come out bug-free and it's going to be wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah.
Honestly, really though, one of my favourite things with Bethesda new releases is the funny bugs you can find. So I don't mind it that much.
Yeah, CD Projekt Red tried to emulate that.
And I got none of them, because it was on PC and it was fine.
And to be honest, I didn't get many bugs till I had one quest I couldn't finish.
Are you telling me that Roach gave you no problems in The Witcher?
Oh no, that was just hilarious, though. Like, you turn around and you've called your horse and it's standing on a roof 30 feet.
Yes!
Away. I love that. Like, that's a bonus, if anything.
Fucking
yeah, but
love.
Roach with bugs fixed is still a beast unto himself.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm one of the people who just likes bugs, to be honest. So,
I think you are one of the few, yeah.
But speaking of buggy releases, we should probably move on to the new ones this week, shouldn't we?
That's a terrible segue.
We don't know that, Pete. That's saying things that aren't. No, come on. We got.
It's also terrible because the first game is one of the greatest games of all time.
I thought you might like this one.
Your first game is called Catizens. Yeah, you already know this is going to be Game of the Year. Coming out on PC August 17th. Inspired by, sit down, RimWorld and The Sims. Catizens is a colony management simulation game where you watch over unique cats and quirky personalities as you help them build and grow their settlement while exploring new lands, facing off against wildlife, and overcoming the challenges of each environment. Obviously goes without saying, Game of the Year. It's cats, RimWorld, and the Sims, and they call it Catizens. I mean, holy shit. It's already on my wish list. Take my money. Guys, I dare you to say a negative thing about this game.
Well, I won't say anything negative about the game. What I'll say is, inspired by RimWorld and the Sims, you could have said any magic. You could have just gone Animal Crossing and Minecraft, and that would work as well. Like, they've just chosen, like, two massive hitters. Just go, sure.
I even looked through all the mechanics, Ben, and I was like, I don't like RimWorld. Like, the view is different, the graphics are different. And then I dig deep and I went, oh, you can, the cats do have like traits, which I guess RimWorld has as well. So, okay.
Exactly. I mean, I did look at this and go, like, this looks nothing at all like RimWorld. What are you
I know. I was upset because I read the blurb and then I saw the animations. Yeah,
the graphics look an awful lot like a Switch game.
So, all honesty, I really do not like the I don't know, graphics or art style, whatever they're going for there. It reminded me a lot of Animal Crossing, and that really upset me.
It doesn't.
Shitty Animal Crossing.
No, okay. It does look quite basic. That is not what Animal Crossing is, but yeah, it does look quite basic. Yeah. I do admit that. Yeah,
I'm surprised the cats don't have their arms training behind them when they run.
Yeah, fair play.
But yeah, game of the year. Next one. From one game of the year to one of our game of the years. The Ascent Cyber Heist DLC. Coming out on PC, PlayStation, Xboxes, all on August 18th. Kira? That's not how you spell Kira, though. K-I-R-A. Kyra, your former employer, has a new top secret job, and as a newly independent contractor, how could you refuse? Venture outside of your familiar arcology into a brand new arcology owned by the... That's really badly done. By the Malhorse Geld Group. There's some new groundbreaking tech right for the taking, but you're not the only one with sights on the prize. Once you've completed the base game, you can play this. You can play it in solo or in co-op. There are new weapons, there are new areas and missions. I thought the main game was brilliant, so I am going to give this a go. Ben and Pete, you both... Well, Pete, you didn't like it as much, but Ben, you thought it was Game of the Year as well.
I did. I think it could be worth a new playthrough.
Yeah.
I think a new playthrough might be in order on this one.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think it's a great game, and I like the sound of this. Although, admittedly, there... Doubling up on our college, there was amusing.
I know. Who writes this?
Yeah, exactly. It's so easily fixed by any editor. But no, I think this sounds really interesting, and it looked decent as well from what I saw. So yeah, I think it could be worth a new playthrough.
Yeah, I think so, because I'd need to refresh before going into this.
Yeah, I always like be doing learning. That. Yeah,
you don't want to be learning things for an extra couple of hours, do you? Yeah, you want to actually experience it.
And twin stick shooters, you kind of need familiarity with them, so yeah, playing it through again will get that back before you go into the difficult bits.
Yeah, I'd quite like to give that one another go.
Agreed. Nice. Cursed to Golf, coming out on PC, PlayStations, Xboxes, and Switch. It's coming out on Game Pass day one as well, August 18th. Cursed to Golf is a golf-like adventure where every shot counts. Players are tasked with making it out of golf purgatory to become a golfing legend. If I say golf one more time. With insane hazards, overworldly power-ups, and tons of replayability, you will make it back alive, or will you forever be cursed to golf? Very good. For the listeners, all three of us are actually golfers, so we should like this. This is like a 2D kind of drag to power up kind of style. And the art style and the music is very 90s arcade. So to me, even as a golfer, I think this looks pretty bad. But what do you guys think?
It was in an Xbox indie. It was in that long, fucking long Xbox indie showcase about 3 or 4 months ago or something. The one that was 2 hours long. What I really liked about this was actually the developer had so much fucking personality. He really made people interested in his game. I thought this game looked all right. It's Game Pass day one, and it is a roguelike, so which they've disguised in there as calling it a golf-like. But yeah, I think it looks worth a go, to be honest.
I think I'm probably going to give this a try. I mean, the fact that they've even got the Mario symbol on the guy's like visor, or at least very similar to the Mario symbol on the visor,
is a bit of a
giveaway to where the inspiration for the look of it came from. But I reckon it's worth a go, and that guy's personality was a winner, Ben, wasn't it? So it's definitely it's on Game Pass. It's worth a
try. It's on Game Pass.
Do you know why I'm not going to play this? And this is a weird one. It's because I very much am aware that I have limited free time to play games. My partner does not like me playing games. So, you know, I kind of have to when I play games, I need to play a good, decent game. And this, to me, gives out huge, like, kind of mobile gaming. If I had a Switch, this would be fucking brilliant, because I don't need to concentrate. I could sit down the sofa and have Call of Duty time with the partner, but still play this, and that would be good. But to come into my room on my big monitor with my PC and load up this game, I don't think I will do that.
I think that's a great point. I think that's a really good point. I got my Steam Deck this week, which we'll talk about another time. But I got my Steam Deck, and I was thinking this would be perfect to have Game Pass loaded up on the desktop mode and play through that and see if it works. Because it's on Game Pass, so it's free. So that's the method I'm going to play it.
Yeah.
You're right. Sitting on the sofa, this game looks perfect. I don't really want to load this up on my monitor at my desk, you know?
Yeah.
It's not, absolutely. Doesn't really feel like that. And this definitely feels like a game that you'd multitask, that you'd be doing something else whilst doing it. You'd be watching sport or something. I think you're right, Eddie. I think you're right. It could be great on Switch.
It could be great, yeah. As your little Steam Deck while watching golf in the background. Yeah, that sounds like a lovely afternoon to me. But, coming in the room and knowing you're going to get, oh, Chris, you're coming to bed. Oh, God, yeah. Let me finish off this game of Cursed Golf. Yeah,
I don't know. I thought you were going to go down the route of, if I'm playing this version of golf, I'd be thinking, why am I not on the golf course?
That's another valid point, isn't it?
I don't think they're that similar that you'd have the crossover too, Ben.
No, but he was talking about having limited time and all this kind of stuff. I thought that's where he was going to go with it, but he didn't.
Nah, I choose gaming over golf every day of the week, you know that. So. Next one, RPG time, The Legend of Wright, coming out on Switch August 18th. It's time for an adventure. Once classes are over, RPG time begins. Game Master Kenta's Notebook holds a handwritten RPG made just for you. This came out on PS4 last year. It's the worst announcement trailer I've ever seen. Listeners, please just type in RPG time, The Legend of Wright. God, the voice and everything about it is just tragic. It started with nostalgic, which already makes me really get just angry at a game. the art style's all done like a pop-up book, which is kind of good that it's kind of like new like that, so that's good. What do you guys think? Pete, I shit on it too much.
What do you think about this, Pete?
This is a case in point Switch game,
and I would it was go PS4 game, it. But don't worry about it.
No, I would not.
Literally came out on PS4.
I know, but it looks like a Switch game.
It does look like a Switch game, man. You got it.
Okay. Okay.
It looks like a Switch game.
It's not a game for me. But it looks incredibly innovative.
That's the word I was trying to think of. I could go
like, they're just,
yeah.
It does not look really innovative, and the style they've gone for looks really cool. Like, if you like it and you're interested in this game, I think it would be really sold to you. Like, if this was the type of thing you were into, and I think I think as a kid's game, this could be fucking
as a kid's game.
As a kid's game,
yeah, I think its target market probably is kids, and I think it really would appeal. I think it looks like it's got great innovation.
Yeah, okay. I'm not gonna disagree with that.
You had a minor problem with the word great, but innovation is definitely there. Yeah, yeah.
You're such a harsh man, Pete.
Thank you.
Pete's in a bad mood, alright? Leave him alone.
I'm very tired, okay?
Alright, we'll move on. Madden 23 coming out on PC, PlayStation, Xboxes, August 19th. Play your way into the history. Why am I reading the blurb to Madden? I'm not going to do that. This is American football game to people outside of the US. I've dabbled in these games, and I've got to admit, they're really, really well put together. They look incredible. The franchise mode is incredible. Ultimate Team that I've played on other games is pretty good. If you're into that sort of thing, it's all your play. And you know what I really liked is when I delved into this, I liked that they said, we're not going to focus on the improvement of Ultimate Team. Which is great, because every other game, FIFA, for example, my God, every year, we're improving Ultimate Team. And to people who don't like Ultimate Team like me, that is just, it's devastating to hear that year on, year out.
You were Div 1.
Yeah.
You were literally in the best possible division for Ultimate Team.
Yeah, what do you want?
But you put in a lot of time on Ultimate Team.
Not when you're as good as me.
Fair play. That's a flex to be amazing at FIFA. That is not a flex that's hurting anyone, but yeah, there we go.
But I only got to Div 1 because I made it like my gaming mission for that month. I was like, this is what I'm gonna do. So I reckon if I didn't have a mode and I was just playing it casually, I never would have played it on to Div 1. But yeah, anyway, the AI is the focus, which is awesome with these games because the AI is always the thing that seems broken. I'm not mad at this. I might even dabble over across at some point. What do you guys think? Are you excited for this or you don't give a shit?
I'm similar to you, Eddie. I'm not mad at this. I'm interested in Face of the Franchise. I'm kind of annoyed I didn't try it last year.
Yeah.
In particular, as a mode. And I will probably dip into it here and there.
I used to be into American football years ago, but then I kind of dropped off and got my reasons for that. But it's fucking long, isn't it? And even games like this, FIFA's great because like 4 minute game or 4 minute halves and all this kind of stuff. Madden's just fucking long, isn't it?
It certainly feels longer. But we did play a fair amount of this Ben back in the day.
Yeah, we did. I mean, I was very much into American football. I know we all have been at different times, haven't we? And some of us still are more so. But I always found on Madden games being in the defense, I always felt like that was didn't really feel like I was doing an awful lot. That's probably just because I was shit at it. But I don't know. Madden games have never really got me. Even when I was really into American football, I still couldn't. I bought it, couldn't really get into it.
I think this is why the Face of the Franchise is the most interesting thing to me, is because just playing straight up versus doesn't really do too much.
Yeah.
Taking a player through a career, yeah, that always adds an interest.
Yes.
Yeah, totally agree. And for me on the NHL ones, I think I've said before, I used to sim half the game, so it actually felt more like a management game. Because yeah, you're right. If you play the same thing over and over again, then it does get a bit. Yeah,
I love the management side of these sports games. Like, absolutely. I really, really do. And as I've said in the previous couple of weeks, I'm getting F1 Manager for that purpose. Like, I don't really, F1 2021 and 2022 and stuff, they don't really interest me as much. I've tried to play it and stuff. I don't actually want to do the roomy roomy. I just want to manage the team doing it.
If there was a game called Spreadsheet Manager, Ben, you would...
Gosh, I'd be working during the day and I'd be happy at night doing my work. I'm like, crazy.
I was going to say, I think that's just called Microsoft Excel, Eddie, and Ben spends far too much time on it already.
To be fair, my partner did, this is probably a month ago, show me this TikTok of a girl finding out about Football Manager and going like, is this what my boyfriend does when he's in the other room? And I was like, yeah, that is exactly what I do. I work when I'm not working, yeah.
You even have spreadsheets on Warzone, Eddie. So.
Oh, yes, don't give me an excuse to get another spreadsheet out.
This is just reminding me of that other blurb for whatever game it was a while ago, about like where it was talking about the experience and the joy of holding down two jobs.
Yeah, that was so weird.
What a flex.
Basically, play Football Manager alongside your normal life and you would feel that anyway. Yeah.
All right, next one. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? No, let me answer that one quickly. PC, PlayStations, Xboxes and Switch, August 23rd. Based on the popular TV franchise... I didn't read the blurb, because my first comment is, it's like the quiz game. based on the popular TV franchise, this charming couch co-op quiz game for 1 to 8 players will have you face more than 6,800 fully English voiced questions. For a fact, that's 6,800 more than Pokemon games. Prove how much you still know from school and that you are, in fact, smarter than a fifth grader. So, this game's like the quiz game. You know that quiz game on TV you've seen? Yeah, a bit like that. This could be fun to play with family and mates. And I might be biased because I literally spent an evening a couple nights ago having quiz games with my parents and my partner. So, and I think maybe playing this could have been more fun. I'm not mad at this.
Yeah, it's not targeted at us. It's not one I would ever pick up, even with mates or family. But I can see who it's for, and it looks pretty good for that. And it has got an awful lot more English voice acting than Pokemon.
If you cracked this out at the weekend, if we came up, what the fuck? It would be the worst.
I think this is probably
the first time that there's been a game on our new releases that I haven't looked it up.
Wow.
I don't care.
You
buddy.
Don't really need to, do you? For one thing, it's kind of
don't
says
care.
What it is on the tin. Fair.
And even if it doesn't, that's fine.
It's a full on. It's on Switch, Ben. You're aware of that, right?
Basically, yep. Ben, you got this spreadsheet and you manage the quiz person. And you.
All right, I'm the quiz compare.
Yeah.
I'm fucking it. I'm all over it.
Brilliant. All right, so no one likes that. Great. Midnight Fight Express coming out on PC, PlayStation, Xboxes, and Switch. August 23rd. Take a breath. A former member of the criminal underworld is lured back to into the life. Back into. Yeah, that's better. By a mysterious drone claiming they have until sunrise to prevent a citywide criminal takeover together. This kind of looks like a twin stick shooter, although the fighting looks fucking good. The melee looks great. the visuals look great for what I can see. I think this could be actually a very good game. It could be. I'm not saying it is, just saying it could be. What do you guys think there?
Do you want to know an interesting fact which may or may not be true?
Well, it's not a fact, then, Ben.
It may or may not be true.
Go on.
It was made by one person.
No, really?
I don't know.
Fuck's sake.
It does only have one person's name on the developer Steam.
Yes, oh, I cool. noticed okay. that, but I Fine. Thought maybe Great. That was like, you know, when someone does that sometimes and they actually like call that company after themselves.
No, I thought that's... I mean, I just had it in my memory banks that this is made by one person, so... I hope that that's true.
I tell you what, this would be so fucking impressive if this was made by one person.
So it looks to me like an isometric Sifu. Got Sifu vibes?
Yeah, I can see that.
I think it looks great. Like, there's a demo on Steam, if anybody wants to check it out. Looks excellent. It's a, yeah, fighter, yeah. I think if you're a fan of Sifu, this could be right up your street.
Okay. I've looked it up, and Jacob... Zwinnel, definitely going to get that wrong. It looks like, yeah, you can find his Instagram and stuff. It says nothing about a company. I think this might just be made by one guy. And if so, that's
there we go.
Fucking
Fact.
Impressive.
Yeah. Fact.
Wow, that's impressive. In fact, still I'm going to call it even... Strong. Yeah, no, this is fantastic. I might get this because I'm always really impressed. Like, I've played a lot of games that's designed by one or two people and... My expectations are way, way lower. I think that's why I think, not Bannerlord, Mountain Blade was one of the best games ever when I first played it. I think it's because I knew it was made by two people, so I went, holy shit, this is incredible.
It does look like it's made by two people.
You're not a fan of the graphics, so I respect that.
I think we poked Switch a couple of times and Ben's now upped his fury levels. To get
But Eddie, there is a demo on Steam, so you can check it out first. See if you like the game.
Very cool. All right, let's move on to the last one, and that's Saints Row. Coming out PC, PlayStation, Xboxes, August 23rd. Welcome to Santo... Do you reckon that's an I, capital I? I'm going to go with it. Ileso, a vibrant fictional city in the American Southwest. In a world rife with crime, a group of young friends embark on their own criminal venture as they rise to the top in their bid to become self-made. So this is the Saints Row that we've been hearing a lot about. For those of you who don't know, it's like a GTA type. I have no interest in this because I've played a few of the Saints Rows and I just find them really silly. I even think they made the active decision to kind of... Yes, I really do think that. I remember playing, was it 5 or something? I can't remember what the most recent one was. And I remember thinking, this is just getting stupid now. It used to be like GTA, just a little silly. But now I just feel like it's just immersion breaking. But are you guys interested? Because I know a lot of people will be. I'm sad that we haven't got Kirk on today, so we can hear
about it. Kirk said he might get it. I'm sure he's going to... Sure, he was really interested in this.
Yeah, he'd be super pumped up for this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I won't go near it either, but he would love it.
I think they've got to be silly because they've got to differentiate themselves from GTA, haven't they? And that's where they've gone with it. A lot of people are hyped for this. I'm really interested in what the reviews say because I'm imagining this being like a low 70s kind of game. Ooh, okay. But if it does review highly, that'd be very, very interesting to bring this game back. You expect a reboot to do quite well, but I don't know. I'm completely just don't know whether this game is going to be good or crap. So
the problem with it, you notice with the reviewers, when it's a big game, they kind of have high expectations.
Mm, so yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I reckon I'm going to put a stamp on 69. Yeah.
What if this wasn't called Saints Row? It'd be interesting if we had that kind of double blind kind of thing going on, and we called it Saints Row and didn't call it, and see what people say. But
and this is the thing as well. This one is, there was a thing on Eurogamer about this a while ago, and it is intending to go back to the roots, as it were, and focus more on gang warfare and less on the wacky stuff. So that could help with the hype as well, because being a genuine competitor to GTA would almost be as good as differentiating, if you know what I mean.
Oh, especially with GTA 6, which is going to be another 3 years or so.
Yeah, great timing to come out as well. Yeah. Mm,
when everyone's furious about not getting it, yes.
I'm furious about the fucking reboot of whatever it was. Yeah.
So what's your game of the week?
That's it. That's a stupid question, Ben, because it's obviously Catizens.
Yeah.
I forgot about that right at the start. Some might say
Midnight Fight Express should have been, but when a name is called Catizens and it's inspired by RimWorld and The Sims, I mean...
Yeah, apologies.
Take my money.
I look forward to your review of that one.
Oh, yes. I'm only going to play that for 5 weeks as well, and I'm going to talk about it every week.
Yep. Yeah, getting more and more angry as it gets.
Oh, instead of RimWorld stories, we could do Catizen stories.
I'd be well behind that. We could have that as a section of the show. I'd be all in. Let us know if you're listening and you want to hear about Catizen's stories. Eddie might just have to play it.
I'm troubled. But okay, we should probably move on to what we've been playing, which is, at least from two of us, probably the most depressing level of what we've been playing has been, which is that I intended to play Hoa, I think that's how you say it, H-O-A. It's a Ori-looking game.
Yeah, you built everyone up last week because you said that you're going to be playing this game that everyone knew about and was hyped about. They were so pumped for this game, Hoa. Hoa, that is so popular.
Mm. I was really looking forward to it. And then he was like, you know, Sunday, I'll recover by playing a really heartwarming kind of Ori-style game. That'll be great. Oh, and then... instead, I was a flailing corpse for all of Sunday.
Focus on anything. Definitely leave the game that you're playing for the podcast that you do every week. Definitely leave it to the night before.
We record this podcast. I had a lot of plans. All right, I had a lot of plans.
He's a busy man.
He's a busy man. Eddie's a busy man. No time.
I can't go too hell to the paint because I have nothing as well. But
I was going to bloody say, Eddie.
Very good. I mean, like, in my defence, I left my house on the day after the podcast and I didn't get back until 8:55 this morning. So, fuck you, Pete. But I will say, I had 1.5 days where I was done with whatever game I was playing. I can't remember what it was now. And I lined up four games, but I was like, I'm not going to buy them because last time I went to visit my parents and come up to London CP, I was biting at the... what's that term?
Chomping at the bit. Isn't it chomping? I say chomping at the bit.
Yeah, it's chomping at the bit. It's not chafing.
You're not chafing.
I mean,
it was
chafing because I'm a big guy.
It's been a
very tired. Get over it.
It's been a hot weekend and I've been wearing shorts, so I've been chafing at the bit for a while. But, I was really chafing at the bit to play Three Kingdoms Total War to get back. So this time I went, don't get a game because then you'll be excited and you won't enjoy your time away. But fuck me, guys. Those 1.5 days of not playing games was the longest 1.5 days of my life. I even, one evening, I logged into my work computer and I did about 2 hours of work.
You said we were on the golf course the next day, and you said that you did that the previous night because I was like, oh, I'm going to go home and play this out of the other.
Yeah.
And you were like, I can't start anything because I'm going away.
I can't.
And you said to me, I've got nothing to do. I even did work.
I have no purpose in life. What do I do? Oh, yeah. It's been really, really painful. Like, even at lunch at work, I was like, oh, sweet lunchtime. Oh, I guess I'll just carry on working. Okay, is that what I do? I played a couple of games of Rocket League and then just, oh, God. But
thank God Katzins is out.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Well, actually, so I had four games lined up. I can't remember what they were, like Kaplurth. One's like this tactical game that I saw someone playing on stream, so I've got that wish list. That's like £5. I've got a game that we had on a new release a couple of weeks ago, and there's another one, and I was so excited to like see which one was cheaper, so I got it. But then I logged on to Game Pass today, and there's one game that I've been kind of interested in. It's like something Trading Company. It looks quite good. Look it up on Game Pass. But, fuck me, Expeditions Rome just came out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy shit. And obviously, I played Expeditions Vikings probably about 6 months ago. I thought it was okay. But my God, I remember when Expeditions Rome came out, probably not that long ago.
I've played the demo, Eddie. I've played the demo. Oh, and you will fucking love it.
Yeah. I remember when I... Because Expeditions Viking looked like it had everything that I was interested in, but I was really disappointed by some bits of it. And when I did the research to this, when it was in our new releases, I remember going, holy shit, there's a lot of little aspects that I love in games. The little bits that stop you doing the main storyline and go and build something somewhere. This game looks like everything I'm looking forward to. So,
yeah, I think you're going to love this.
I've already downloaded it. In fact, I didn't want to waste a minute after this podcast, so I even left my PC running all day so that it installed in time.
It's nice. On PC Game Pass, yeah?
PC Game Pass.
Yeah, because it's not on Xbox, is it?
Isn't it? Oh, I didn't check that. Sorry, yeah.
No, I've made that up, but I don't think it's an Xbox game. I think it's... Because, I mean, I've played it, and it seems like a PC
game. Very much a PC game. To me, anyway. I can't play these games on Xbox, so that's why I haven't even checked on Game Pass, but Xbox Game Pass. So, yeah, I've installed it on PC, and I'll definitely be talking about that one next week.
Yeah, nice. I look forward to your thoughts on that because, as I said, I played the demo. I can recognise its greatness, and I think you will fucking love it.
Yeah,
For me at the time, I just didn't have the time to commit to it because there's so many systems and everything. You just got to fucking dive right in.
You've got to go all in. Yeah,
exactly. But okay, well, shall I talk about 2 Point Campus to start with? Because that came to Game Pass.
Game Pass.
Katzins isn't coming to Game Pass. So, yeah, 2 Point Campus. I'll give you my first impression. So, I played it for a couple of hours, and I did think before I played it. I spoke to you, Eddie, and I said, I could really get into this. I could have a full night on this. This would be quite good. But if you think you know what this game is, if you think you know how it plays, and if you think you'll know whether you'll like it or not, you're probably right. You know it already. It's that obvious. There isn't really...
Yeah.
It's a simple, marginally off-the-wall, basic management sim for university campuses. You know, I leveled up to got the second campus available and then finished and then did more on my first campus and everything. And yeah, it's nice. But I don't think, I mean, if stuff has evolved on from 2 Point Hospital, then fair enough. I think it's just a new location. But it also reminds me very much of Megaquarium that Kirk and I reviewed ages ago.
Yeah, like, I remember that one.
These games are all very similar. They're all very similar. It's just that that's on a smaller scale. So it's not... There's nothing really that crazy about it. If you think you already know what this game is, you probably do.
Yeah.
What I would be really interested to know is who played this game, stats-wise, like me, for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then never played again?
Okay.
Because I think it's that type of game. I think if you paid money for it, you'd be like, yeah, okay. I gotta commit a bit more to this, but I could be completely wrong, and so there'll be people out there saying no, you don't get it, which is fine. I'm not saying I definitely get it. It's first impressions, but my first impression is I know what the gameplay loop is now. You can add in more stuff, but it's still the same gameplay loop.
Yeah.
So it hasn't got that thing that makes me want to go back and play it again. It strikes me as one of those games that you might put 10, 15 hours into, and then you'll drop it, and you might come back to in 6 months' time and be like, ah, that was, I had a really good time with that game, actually. I'm going to play that again.
Ben, did but you it ever doesn't play, strike me. Sorry, did you ever play Theme Hospital and Theme Park Ride or whatever that was called? Did you ever play those two when we were younger?
When I did play Theme Hospital a little bit, but it was around a friend's house. I didn't have it myself, so I haven't got that massive nostalgia for it, but I get what the games are.
Yeah.
To me, it seems something nice and it's decent. If you like those games, then you'll like the game. I don't think it's got anything else.
How was the humour and the voice acting? Because they're normally things that, well, they're things I know people have spoken highly about.
That's the thing they have to get right as well, because let's be honest, I don't want to be rude, but I think these are basically trying to go exactly down the theme park and theme hospital route.
Definitely, yeah.
The humour doesn't raise a smile. It's just like,
That's not great humour then.
It's just like, okay. Maybe I'm just the wrong audience. I am the wrong audience. This game has been getting grave reviews. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, for what it is, it's very good at it. You know, people are really, really loving this.
Was that great and rave combined? Or did you actually mean the word grave?
Because did I say grave?
Yeah. Which doesn't come off well.
It's getting grave reviews. Yeah. Well, it's getting great rave reviews.
There we go.
So it really is. Like, people were saying this is really good, and I think it's very, very competent and good at what it is doing. I think if you're grading a game on how good it is it at trying to reach its goal of what it wants to be, then I think it really is. It's just, you know, there's I just found it okay.
Yeah, it's just not for you. That's fair.
Yeah, it's not for me. And Pete, I know you don't want to touch it. I think probably for the same reasons. I played it because it's new on Game Pass. It's effectively kind of free, and we do a podcast, so that's why I played it. Eddie, is this something that would interest you at all to give a whirl?
I was really excited when you started this review with "if you think you know this," because that would have been enough for me to play it, because I loved Theme Park. I think it was called, and Theme Hospital. I played so much of Theme Hospital. So I was really excited if you were going to go like, oh, this is different. This is really focused on the management of stuff and getting up the finances and stuff like that. But yeah, you kind of make it sound like my inner voice when I was doing research about this game. Like, I don't think it will keep me.
Look, I'm sure it is on the later university campuses, and I'm sure on like hard, difficult, I assume you can put it on hard difficulty. I'm sure it is very, very focused on all of that stuff, and yeah. So I'm sure there is a lot of management elements that I'm not giving credit to.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that in the couple of hours that I played of it, I think that's probably the cut of the loop. I think I get it, and I think I'll get whether I'll enjoy more of it. Not to say that other people won't. It's just that, yeah. Not for me.
Fair enough. I think we probably need to move on to Cult of the Lamb, don't we?
Yeah, let's move on to Cult of the Lamb. So I know, Pete, you were interested in this one as well.
Very much so, yes.
So let's... and I purposefully didn't really talk to you much about it to leave it just for the podcast. Mm. So first of all, credit where credit's due to the developer, 2000 IQ, because we got given a code the day after it was released, so I'd already bought it by then.
Yes, really respect. Smart.
Yeah. Can we also add in the fact that they put the title of it, that it was a PC code?
Yes.
So you offered it to me, and then we went, oh no, it's Switch.
It was win-win. it was a dark 5 minutes when that came through.
Yes.
As I realized I was 20 quid down, but I have had the opportunity to play it on Steam Deck, and it runs fantastically on Steam Deck. So even though it's I think it's playable when it's not verified, don't let that put you off. It plays fucking brilliantly if you've got Steam Deck. But yeah, I thought that was quite funny, that whole episode. I could have returned my copy on Steam and then just played the Switch version. But I thought, you know what? That's not the type of guy that I am anymore.
Saint.
Anymore. So I thought, no, I've paid my money. Take my money. This isn't Chernobylite. So yeah, So anyway, playing on Steam Deck, and I've played 8 hours so far. So I finished two of the main bosses, of which there are four. That's not a spoiler. You're told that pretty much from the outset. So if there's more after those four, there might be. I don't know. So, but I'm in the third area, and so it does seem like a 15 to 20 hour game, I would say, because I'm imagining the latter parts will take a bit longer. So let's just call it 15 hours, something like that.
Yeah,
which is a pretty good return, especially on a 20 quid game. I think that's a pretty good return. Not great for roguelikes, I'd say. Roguelikes usually have a bit more longevity, but you might be some replayability. I don't know yet. The whole concept is that you're this lamb that's spared from death at the hands of four heretic prophets. And you're only spared if you agree to start a cult in this kind of like godlike demon stranger's name. Like, he's the one that saved you. I mean, your only options are yes or absolutely. So you have to start the cult.
Nice.
But yeah, and then you're tasked with defeating the four heretics in their individual areas. And I think that would set the demon free. I don't know. I just assume it does. So basically, you're kind of... There's no real good or bad, because what you're doing is kind of bad, but you don't really... You just get on with it. Like, this game's got quite a bit to it. It works basically as a mix between Animal Crossing and Dungeon Crawler as a roguelike. They're the roguelike elements. But then add in some, like, demonic kind of South Park woodland critters. That's effectively what this game is. Your main task is you build up your cult, you gain more followers, and you gain more faith to then grow your cult and gain more abilities and access deep areas of the dungeons, defeat the bosses, move on to the next ones. That's the kind of leap. So you've got base building, Eddie. You've got a lot of base building. You've got to keep people happy. And then once you've done all that management sim stuff, you then do your dungeon crawling, and that gets you resources. You take down the mini bosses, and once you've done an area like 3 or 4 times, the main boss then reveals itself as the final boss of the area.
So let me get this straight. How much control do you have over your cult?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you control the people, or is it just your own person building buildings or something?
So you are the person that's in charge, so you're just you. You're the lamb. You have these followers that you acquire through going through the dungeons and saving them and joining your cult and all this kind of stuff. You then tell them what to do, as in to mine or to chop down trees or to tend the farms, or to worship you. All this time, you assign them different tasks so that they build up different areas of your camp. You then build all there's loads of buildings to build, but you have to level up your cult to then give access to all these buildings. Essentially, what you're controlling is hunger, faith, and sickness. They're the three main areas that you're controlling in your cult.
Right.
And the game, for its base building element, is actually quite deep on it. Weird turn of phrasing here. It's quite deep on the surface. But you are just, you're just controlling those. You're controlling hunger, faith, and sickness.
Yeah.
So there are, when you just boil it down in your head to going, oh, right, that's just, and resource management. So it's just one of those things that it's kind of helping. But you also unlock things like doctrines, which then kind of change your cult and the playthrough. Like, you could have a doctrine either allowing people to get married or where you let them fight to the death. Like, it's those two options. And you can have a doctrine where you celebrate people dying, or so your followers don't mind people dying, or you can have one where you can bring people back to life and raise them from the dead, and shit like that. And so it's generally you have a choice of what your doctrines do, which then at different times you can perform rituals to increase your faith or decrease your hunger or something like dramatic. So if everyone's starving in your whole place, then you can do a ritual so everyone has a big feast. If you've unlocked that one, but you could have gone for another one where it might have been a complete different outlook on how things work. Like, you can allow murder, you can punish whatever. Like, it's so many different variants on how your cults can come together, because all of these, every time you try and do a doctrine, you have a choice between two kind of contrasting ones.
Yeah.
So it does actually vary up quite a bit. So your followers around the camp, they do age, and they either die of old age or they can get sick and they can die as well. And you can, yeah, so, and that's it. And especially if you don't keep the camp sanitary by picking up all the shit, then literal shit, then everyone gets ill and shit like that.
Do you have to pick that up personally? Is that
you have to sweep it, actually. You have to sweep it. And later on, you can develop an outhouse so that your little animals can go to the shitter in peace.
That's a bit too high tech for the beginning. Right, okay.
Yes, it is for the beginning. And you can also develop something else so that somebody else will clean up the shit and it doesn't have to be you.
There we go.
And then you've got that part, and then you've got also different areas of the map, which when you go out of your camp, you can go to different areas of the forest and down to the water to fish and all these different types of things. So there is quite varied stuff there. And then the other part of the gameplay is the dungeons. So you choose to go into the dungeons. They consist of like a room-to-room thing, like Hades.
Yeah.
But all the rooms are connected, so you can actually go back and forward between rooms, but you're just trying to find the door to take the elevator to take you to the next level. So there's like usually three or four levels that you're trying to get to before you get to the mini boss or the final boss in that particular area. And if you die, it doesn't really matter. Your resources are cut a little bit, and you just go back. Like, death is inconsequential, apart from you lose a bit of faith, which you can gain back from your followers pretty easily. But the whole thing is that the dungeon area is the roguelike element.
Right.
And then but you come out and you could just go back in. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. Graphically, this looks fantastic. And you guys have seen it, obviously.
Yeah.
I love the graphical style. The humor's good. As I said, very demonic South Park. Like,
perfect.
In look and humor.
Yeah.
Like, it really does do it well, captures it well. The combat when you're in the dungeons, it's not quite Hades kind of. I mean, that is pretty much the epitome of these types of games for me. But it's simpler, but it's incredibly responsive. Really, really responsive. The roll away. So you get a main attack, weapon attack, you get a ranged attack, and you get a roll. You're kind of assigned the weapon and the ranged attack when you walk into the dungeon, kind of randomly. I think there's like four different types of each. And then throughout the dungeon, you might get the opportunity to change them. And you can upgrade your abilities outside of this to upgrade status effects and things like that, and to get more health and all that kind of business as you go through. So there is a bit of variability, not as much as you would get in something like Hades, but definitely some variability. So overall, every component of this game is really good, and after a couple of hours, you think this game is really amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's got everything. But there's something, and I say this at the point of 8 hours, so it could change, but there's something at the moment missing for me. What I think about, despite the variability that you see in the buildings and the items and the upgrades and the cool rituals, all that type of stuff, the loop is very similar. Like, what I experienced in hour one is basically exactly the same as I've got in hour nine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you build up your camp and stuff like that, but it doesn't feel like it's changing an awful lot. I will absolutely complete this. There's no doubt about it. It's a good game. It's a really good game. I'm just not as excited as I thought I would be to get back to it. Like, I'm probably going to play it after this podcast. I could equally not, but I probably will. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. It's not a compulsion to complete it. You're just going to.
Yeah, I'm just going to, because, you know, I've bought it. I like playing on my Steam Deck. It's the game that I'm playing at the moment.
And you gave away
the
Switch
code. I'm going to
complete it. Yeah.
Switch code's gone, so... Yeah, here we are.
Fair. Well, I mean...
So, yeah, good game, though. Good game.
I suppose all of my characters are going to... All of my questions are going to revolve around the base building side.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, what interaction do you have with the cult members, and do they have with each other? Do they, like... get married, do random shit, kill each other.
Well, I've just said that people can get married. So,
you did, yeah.
So I've just said that. Okay, I was not on this. Sorry, not to you guys. To my cult.
Right.
To my cult.
Right.
I've just allowed them. I'm just searching for the word. But I've announced that they can get married or whatever. But I think I have to announce a ritual for that to happen, and then they'll just get married off. But so your interaction with people, you can go around the camp, you can interact with them, you can tell them what to do, you can tell them where to go, what to do, etc. They also come to you with mini tasks saying like, oh, this has happened, or can you go and search for this, or can you do this stuff to increase the faith. They also say like, oh, that guy over there, he's speaking ill of the camp, you need to fucking sort him out. And then you put one in prison, then you give a sermon to them individually and try and like re-educate them and all this kind of bullshit. So it's but you can give them blessings, you can give them items which will give them particular perks, like all of your characters have individual traits for like whether they're gullible or something like that, or they're likely to speak behind your back and all this kind of shit.
Yeah.
So there is that. But it's like, as I said, it's a weird turn of phrase that I'm using, but it's like a surface level depth. It's like everything seems deep, but it's not that deep.
Yeah. No, I do kind of get what you mean with that. Okay.
It's like the presentation of depth, but I'm not sure what really matters.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, that faith bar there, like you could do sermons every day. You could do a sermon to your flock of people, and that will raise your faith and all that kind of stuff. But if you just go around and give them all blessings, then the faith bar goes up to the top anyway. Like, so I'm not sure whether everything is absolutely necessary and it's just more dressing. And you can like put decorations all around the camp and all this kind of stuff. And as I said, a shit ton of buildings. You can send them on little missionary missions to go and get resources, all this kind of stuff. Like, oh, people God, get ill and awesome. You put them in bed rest, and you can create a little health station so they can all get healed there. And when you go into the dungeons, the god that you're facing at the time might just appear randomly in the dungeon somewhere and go, right, all of your people are fucking diseased, and it brings them all in front of them. Then it makes them all sick and then sends them all back. So there are some interesting things. And even like at night, if you wake someone up when they're sleeping, they're pissed off at you. So I waked one up for a chat, and he was like, so cool. Oh, fuck off.
But you woke some guy up for a chat?
Yeah, I don't think I meant to.
You're the worst cult leader, right?
But yeah, it's got all little interesting mechanics, but I'm just not sure how much everything matters.
Okay, yeah.
But it's all little interesting bits, but it is corner kind of all, everything seems quite deep, but it's relatively near the surface.
Okay.
What's the point? I don't understand. What's the point in like keeping your people? Is there?
Oh, because there is a gateway to each area that you go to. So the first area required like 3 followers.
Excellent.
The second one requires like 10, and then 15, 20 or whatever, so that you do need them.
Right,
but there's like certain things, like I watched something on Twitter earlier, it was like you needed to have 15 dead bodies or something to do some ritual or something like that. and somebody asked like, how do you even get them? And then somebody just had a picture of just like 15 wrapped up corpses that were rotting on the ground. Like, that's how you do it. Because you get like, because you can get certain rituals that you can perform to sacrifice people, like if that's in your doctrine, because your doctrine could be completely different to this, but you could get a doctrine that says you could just sacrifice people. There are many, many different ways to skin the cat on this, but ultimately there's about 3 or 4 bars that you just need to keep topped up, and that is hunger and sanitization and faith.
I mean,
really,
you can sum up pretty much every base builder / strategy game with that.
I know.
Yes,
and I realized as I was saying that earlier, like, yes, of course, because it's a game and it comes back to the fundamentals.
Yeah.
But it's just that I don't know how much you need to do all of the stuff to get that to still work.
That stuff isn't so, and the veneer over that mechanic of 3 isn't quite enough.
Is there a difficulty setting? Do you know?
Yes, there is. I'm playing on normal. There is easy, normal, hard, and very hard. So actually, Eddie, this is a brilliant point. contrary to what I've just said, because the difficulty setting probably does require... means that when you go around giving people blessings, it probably doesn't do much
that,
to your...
That's so important to me, these kind of games, that you need a reason to be doing the base building, to be doing the colony management. And I've noticed that there are some games where they don't have a difficulty setting, and as soon as you kind of master what you need to do here and there, it kind of makes the game obsolete. But if it's there's a difficulty setting, even in like Total War that I've been recently playing, because I've whacked the difficulty setting, the things that you do in the normal game where you can't be asked to keep someone happy, one of your generals happy, or they have an argument and you don't give a shit, you just click it off. If you up the difficulty, it makes the game so much better because it means all your little decisions are meaningful. So,
I think you're probably right. And there's things like going around, you can speak to your followers and then you can read their mind to see what they're really thinking and stuff like that, and see whether they really are dissenting. Like one of my followers said that guy over there, he's a right cunt. Like you need to put him in prison. And then I went, all right, I'll look into it. I went over, read his mind. He's like, nah, he's fine, mate. Don't worry about it. He's all good. He's all good, buddy. There are a lot of cool things. And the little animations when you do a particular ritual and all this, it's all very cool. Like, there's no doubt about it. Very stylized coolness. I'm interested to know what I'm going to be feeling after 15, 16 hours.
Yeah, it's funny because you say that it sounds like you're not enjoying it, but like your descriptions sound fantastic.
Exactly. Every component of this, add it all up, you're like, this would be fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And when I'm playing it, I'm enjoying it. But I have been playing, which I'm not talking about today, but I have been playing Inscription.
Mm.
And I had times where I could have played either and I played Inscription.
Right, okay. I think this game is more for me and you than Ben, Eddie.
This sounds right on my street.
Whack it on very hard so that every single thing matters.
And the combat will be solid then, because there's another thing about the combat. Like, I've died a couple of times, but mainly because I haven't been bothered when I've just been... Oh, I've been on my last run for the night and I've been like, ah, fuck it, I'll just have a go, get some resources. And you get hit a couple of times, you're like, fuck it, who cares?
Yeah.
But actually, the combat isn't that difficult. So you're probably right. If you whack it on hard, very hard or something, it's interesting. Mm.
Yeah.
If only I had a free code for that, that'd be quite cool.
Well,
I was really looking forward to it, Eddie.
Pete got the massive dummy on it. Yeah. Pete got the dummy.
Absolutely.
Free sold. PC code. Oh, here's your code, Pete. Nah.
I even looked at it and we're like, that is the first time I've seen a Steam code that looks like that. But I was like, but I'll go with it. And no, didn't work. Did not work at all. Good times.
2000 IQ.
Anyway, I think you're going to have to talk about that again next week because we're going to need to know, Ben, what the final...
I will absolutely 100% be playing more of it, so there's no doubt about it.
Excellent. Well, for now, though, I think we should move on to the feature.
Cool.
Mm.
Yeah, so obviously, as we mentioned at the beginning, our feature this week is called If You Had 5 Minutes with Obsidian. And again, this is hopefully the start of a series of these where we're going to come up with interesting people in the industry you want to talk to. And obviously for us, Obsidian is a pretty darn good studio to start with, isn't it?
So bigger podcasts would come up with this feature and then speak to them, like in an interview.
Yes.
But because we're not that big, we can't get the people to interview. So we just come up with the questions that we would say.
To be fair, we didn't ask them. Maybe if we asked them.
Yeah, we could. We're not proactive either. That's the other key.
That is very true.
Also, as you'll see from our questions, there's a very good reason they wouldn't accept it.
No. Ooh. If we sent these over,
they'd just be like, what the hell? Because, I mean... Oh, I'll kick us off if you want. And my first one of these would have been to beg them to do whatever it takes to make Fallout New Vegas 2. It's not even a question.
Yep.
Not even a question.
I knew that this was going to be mine, so when I came onto the dock, I just copy and pasted yours.
You haven't even changed the name, so I'm now getting confused.
So, guys, what makes Fallout New Vegas such a Fallout that they need to emulate and that Outer Worlds doesn't fill that gap for you?
Oh, the Outer Wilds doesn't...
Outer Worlds.
Did I say Wilds? I'm going to... I mean, Pete loved Fallout New Vegas way more than me. I think that probably is because I still quite liked Fallout 4. But for me, it was because Fallout New Vegas, I think the storytelling was the best in the whole series. I've said that many times before. And no offence to Outer Worlds, I played that game for 15 hours. I think a large part of it because it didn't feel open world. I felt like a lot of the story arcs were, I don't want to use the term again, but quite silly. And a weird thing where, you know, your companion, if it was on easy settings, then it was fine. But on the hardest setting, which I played it on, he died in a heartbeat or
yeah,
she
just fall instantly.
Yeah. They just fall instantly. And there's no like respawn or anything. They're just dead. So that was devastating. But no, I guess if I'm going to credit anything, I would say the storytelling.
That's definitely the key one. And even the DLC for New Vegas were incredibly well tied into the story. You know, things like Lonesome Road was such a good finish for it. It was just so well done. I think Fallout 4 obviously has the concept of multiple factions you can team up with and sort of picking a side.
Yep.
But the way it was executed meant that you could never find any kind of balance between. Whereas in New Vegas, you had a lot more flexibility. There's three major sides, but almost all the time you can find a way to make it work with two of them, sort of, if you take control of your own way. You had a few more options in who was going to end up in charge, how it was going to happen, whether you just took over or whether you let the whole world go mad. It was that kind of fluidity to it was really, really well executed. And it's just, I don't know, I suppose it just had a different vibe to the other Fallouts for me as well. And one I really liked.
I'll
just add on to that. I think if New Vegas came out after 4 with the technology they had, with the mechanics that they could easily introduce, I think New Vegas would have been by far the best Fallout. I only enjoy playing Fallout 4 more because, of course, the base building mechanics.
and they are very good, to be fair, to Fallout 4.
Yeah, they are. So, they're fucking amazing.
Yeah, that would be why that would be the first thing I'd do, would just be beg them to make Fallout New Vegas 2. I don't care the legal hurdles and the ownership and everything else.
Getting sued.
We know that they've gone down the Outer Worlds route for the moment. I think one of the things that I'd be intrigued to know their feelings for would be that conventional way of delivering dialogue in RPGs now, which you have like 4 options, you choose one and then you'll choose some sub options, then you go back to the main list and then you could choose another one.
Mass Effect dialogue wheel. That everyone else then took on. Yeah.
Yes. Now is out of date. But that is not how games do it now. Like, this has been elevated to a new level. Disco Elysium just took it to an absolute new level where the fluidity of dialogue and choices, like, the conversation is never the same. You go from one to another. You have options just being delivered to you. You're not going back. You're not doing a tick box exercise, which, and there's nothing wrong with this because a generation of games did it, or two generations of games did it. But that is not how top level games do it now. And Outer Worlds still did it. I am interested to see whether they feel like they need to innovate for Outer Worlds 2 with this new level. And I'm actually away from Obsidian, hoping that Starfield sort that out. But I don't know whether this is just an Obsidian and Bethesda as well do it a lot. But I don't know whether they're changing this anytime soon. And it's just not good anymore. It's not good enough, I don't think.
Ben, I actually take it one step farther, and I get worried that if I don't click certain dialogue bits, that I won't get certain dialogue options later on.
Absolutely. Even on my sixth playthrough. Yeah, and you're asking things like that don't work with the conversation anymore, or it's like you've always gone back and said. Whereas the new way of doing it with these wonderful games, I mean, as I said, Disco Elysium is just takes it to, and I know it didn't have combat and everything, so that's their main focus, the narrative and how you deliver, but that just demonstrated, oh sorry everyone else, that's no longer a thing now because this. And even dare I say it, Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy does it the same thing. Like, you, it's a fluid conversation. Like,
I've got something for them. All right, and this is why I need to be in the room with Obsidian. How about if you have a patience meter, right?
Ooh.
And if you ask questions like out of turn, where it's just randomly you go and, oh, where's Jim again? Or maybe if you ask the same question twice, the meter depletes more. And if you deplete that meter, they go, obviously, leave me alone. I'm so bored with talking to you. So that from then on, you have to, if you want to ask a question, because obviously you should have the option to, just in case you literally forget where the person is or whatever, you have to pay them. You have to go, look, yeah, I'll give you 50 quid. I'm sorry that I've wasted your patience.
I think that is a great... There's also an abduct and torture version for if you haven't asked.
Ah, yes. Pete's on the line.
I do think there's that there are mechanics. That's a great little mechanic, just to keep the same old mechanic, but just to add something new to make it a bit more... I do think there's that day. I do think there are games that do it better. Do they need to do it the same way as the other games? No. Could they innovate like this? Maybe. But I'm just interested to know what they think about this, because RPGs and these types of RPGs, that's their bread and butter. That's how things are done. Do they feel they need to innovate? Do they also feel pressured with The Outer Worlds 2, given that Starfield's coming out? Because Starfield looks so fucking next gen, and I know they're all under the Xbox banner, but Starfield is so... got all this hype in the world. Does that put pressure on Outer Worlds 2, do you think?
I think they took a different route with it, personally. When I see Outer Worlds, I don't think they took the same route as the Fallout. I think they went a bit jokey. Like, even Outer Worlds 2 trailer, the complete lols that trailer has.
Yes, it's good.
I think they're playing quite, and I don't want to compare it to this, but I'm going to, is the GTA in Saints Row. I think they've kind of, after Fallout, to go to the Outer Worlds, it was, to me, a different game. Don't get me wrong, those things that I mentioned earlier really pissed me off about the game, but at no point was I like, oh, this is a different Fallout. I still thought it was its own game.
So, yeah, that's an interesting point, and where they're going, because they have to deviate slightly, don't they? Yes. They have to demonstrate a different type of game. And I know Outer Worlds was that kind of... a lot of people saw it as almost a spiritual space successor to New Vegas, just because it was made by the same people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is different in tone, and that trailer for the second one is different again. So maybe that's it. But I think Starfield is hopefully going to set a new impression for these types of games.
Quite possibly so. What about you, Eddie?
Yeah, I'm certainly. Obviously, the New Vegas. I'll run through my three quickly. I would like them to rank, only because it'll put them in an awkward place, Divinity Original Sin games with Baldur's Gate games and with Pillars of Eternity. I would genuinely like that. I love all three sets of games. I would still put Pillars of Eternity at the bottom of those three, though. Mm. Pete, would you? I think you might, even though you love Obsidian.
I do, and I might still. And one of my other questions is tied to this, because I was going to ask, is there going to be a Pillars 3? I really bloody hope there would be. But you have a point, and I probably would put it below the other two.
You know what, Pete? It's interesting, because has Baldur's Gate 3 done well?
I don't think so.
I hear a lot of criticism about that game.
I don't think so, and I think it suffered very much so for being in early access for like a fucking year.
Both of those two are under Larian now, aren't they? They're both Divinity and that.
Yes.
Yeah, and they gave Baldur's Gate 3 to Larian because of the fact that they did so brilliantly with Divinity.
I mean, the reviews
are very positive on Steam.
Okay.
For Baldur's Gate 3. Okay. But I haven't even considered picking up yet, which says a lot.
No, neither have I. And that's shocking, because Baldur's Gate 2 Shadow of Arm was one of my favourite games ever when I was a kid. Yeah. So,
understandably so. But yeah,
I always think of Divinity and Pillars as basically the same game, because I haven't played either. Like, I have played a bit of Original Sin 2, and I just thought, right, okay, this is too much for me right now. I kind of think of them as the same game when I see them anywhere.
Again, all three of them are very similar. They're all the D&D computer games, you know. That's really what they do. And that's why ranking them is quite difficult anyway. Because I think your playthrough in each of these games would probably influence which one you liked most. Just the random stuff that can occur.
Of course.
But yeah, that's a really good one, Eddie. And I would be interested to see what they said, because I reckon a lot of them would be fans of Baldur's Gate originally anyway. So
Yeah, absolutely.
Great choice. Go on, what else did you have?
I've also, I want them, and this is kind of going off Ben's, is I want to know from their mouth what they think the future of the RPGs might look like. I mean, we've seen them, they made the move, didn't they, from the old isometric games to was it Avowed? It's supposed to be first person? Is that right?
Yep, Avowed's first person, I think.
So, yeah, I would like to know, for a start, why they made that decision. And second of all, like, yeah, what they think the future is, because for me, a hardcore RPG-er, you know, there are some things that get a bit old. I've jumped across to a couple of the kind of Pillars of Eternity-style games, because there's so fucking many of them, and I get really bored really quickly, unless it's a fucking belter like Divinity Original Sin 2. So yeah, I would like to know that, but what I'd really like to tell me is what they think of Wasteland 3. Because, obviously, they're involved in Wasteland 2, and... Yeah. I think I've said many times before, I'll definitely put that in my top five games of all time. It's probably in my top three, if you have forced me to put a top three. And I thought it was incredible. I thought everything about it. And then Wasteland 3, I think I've talked about it on this podcast three different weeks, because on three occasions I've tried to force myself to play it. And there's something about that game that I was just really fucking disappointed with. So, yeah, part of my brain, probably because I respect Avowed so much because of the games they've released, but I want to say it's because they weren't involved. So I want to get their take on that.
It's an interesting one as well, because I find it interesting that Wasteland 3 is by In Exile.
Yes.
Obviously were involved in the early Fallouts when it was Interplay.
Yes,
And then obviously you've got Obsidian, who did Wasteland 2 and also got stuck into Fallout. Yeah, I would be curious to hear what they thought about it. It's funny how they develop the rep for being the exact same things, isn't it? Into the same things.
Yeah. But that's me. That's my 5 minutes. It's probably going to be a lot of it me ranting at them, but yeah.
Well, fair enough. I suppose I'll cover off my last one, because obviously I mentioned that I wanted to know if there'd be a sequel to Deadfire, the second Pillars of Eternity. And I would love to know that. But my other one would just more be a curiosity question, because I'd love to ask why they weren't involved with South Park Fractured But Whole. Because obviously the first one, Stick of Truth, was done by Obsidian but published by Ubisoft. And the second one was pure Ubisoft. But what people often forget is that Trey Parker and Matt Stone actively approached Obsidian to make the first one. They were the ones who went out and asked them. So I'd really like to know why they weren't involved in the second.
Both games are bangers. The combat in the second one is far better than the first, but the story is probably better than the first and the second.
It tells you a lot about the developers. But yeah. But those would be my questions in the 5 minutes. That and continually begging about New Vegas 2. Go on.
I've only got one more, and I think it's one which a lot of people go, oh yeah. Where the fuck is Avowed?
Yeah.
I mean, we just heard absolutely nothing. We know that Obsidian have worked very, very hard on Grounded, and that is doing very well now. You can get that on Game Pass, and the Outer Worlds also Game Pass, and making Outer Worlds 2 now. But has Avowed just gone away? Like, we saw this when they were fucking doing press conferences about the Series X console.
Yeah.
Like, this was at presentations years ago, where we got minor... wasn't gameplay, but it's like CGI kind of gameplay stuff, wasn't it? And we just had nothing. We all thought like, oh, this is like Skyrim. This is like a new Skyrim.
Yeah.
But we just had nothing, and it's amazing. This game is one of those amazing games that has hype despite no one knowing anything other than seeing a guy walking around with hands and like magic in his hands.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, okay, I get what the game is. It's that universal gaming thing. Oh, right, okay. This is Skyrim.
Yeah.
But yeah, where the fuck is it? Has it just stopped? Because if it has, then I'd like to know that it's just not a thing.
Yeah, I don't think that's the issue. But I do. I actually left this off, Ben, because I saw you put that question down. And I think that is a question everyone would want to ask.
Which they would never answer.
So. Well, of course they would.
Until they're ready. Until they're ready.
Yeah, and as you can see from our entire list of questions, this is why we don't get interviews. But, or even go after them. But no,
oh, you never know. We could tag them in our Twitter post on this, and we might get some feedback like we did with the ending guys.
Very true, which would be leave us alone, please.
Yeah.
But, much like the game footage from Avowed, we know exactly what the reply will be. We know what we're looking for there. Yeah, but it would be interesting to know just how far off it is, because we're 2 years since the announcement trailer already, and yeah, we've seen nothing more.
Nothing. Not a jot.
Mm. Well, if they wanted to tell us, then, any more about Avowed or any answers to our questions, how could they do so?
If Obsidian would like to tell us about Avowed, they can tweet us at Grumpy Gamers Pod. They can tweet us at Grumpy Gamers Pod, or Obsidian, you can email us at podcast@grumpygamers.co.uk. Don't be scared to comment on any of our YouTube videos, nice. Grumpy Gamers Podcast, or join us live 7 o'clock on Thursday for streaming on Twitch, Grumpy Gamers Podcast, all one word.
Fantastic stuff. Fantastic. What are you going to be streaming this week? Is it decided yet? Or
you had to
not
ask
decided.
Question, didn't you?
Not decided. Didn't need to bring it up. We did put it on the dock, Pete.
Yeah, did put it on the dock.
You did put it on the dock.
Yeah. The sin of omission was the problem there, okay? You should have just put TBD and I'd have left it alone.
Yeah, didn't want to say anything about it. So.
No. Well, probably Warzone. I'm up for Warzone. So.
It's going to be Warzone. Okay, fantastic.
Probably. Maybe. Yeah, well, cool.
We'll let everyone look forward to that, because for this week, it's GG.
GG.
GG.